most people don't ever really think about it, but I mean, it has implications on the opportunities we'll have or we won't, the expectations, the societal expectations, even the money we'll make in our life, you know, our safety. It has a lot of implications that most folks don't think through.
Candid conversations that might just change how you look at the world. Let's bridge cultures, transcend borders, and build a global family of change makers. Welcome to If By Chance.
Mac McGregor has spent decades fighting and teaching others to do the same. In a former life, Mac traveled the world demonstrating how to take a strike to the throat without injury. But these days, Mac's fighting for something else, to change the mental construct of what it means to be a man.
By the time I was 17 years old, I won the lightweight fighting title, the United States lightweight fighting title. And I had been traveling all over competing all through the different belt ranks. So I won the lightweight fighting title, and that propelled me to international competition and a spot, an opportunity to try out for the U.S. karate team, which I did. And then I started traveling internationally, and it really opens up your world, of course. I think one of the greatest educations in the world is to get to travel to different cultures and meet people from different cultures and backgrounds, and it just expands your world, right? And so that really was a wonderful experience for me. And I was on the U.S. karate team until I was 39 years old, from the time I was 17, off and on for different competitions. So I was actually at 39, the oldest person on the U.S. karate team, male or female. And these 19 and 20 and 21-year-old kids on the team were calling me the grandparent of the team. And so I happened to do well, and I won 2 medals in that world championships. And I thought, this is probably a really good time to retire from competition since they're calling me the grandparent. So that's when I retired from competition. Yeah. But I've coached 59 national champions and 29 junior Olympic champions.
Wow. That must have taken up a lot of time. What else was going on in your life?
You had to be dedicated in a way that, you know, most of my friends didn't understand, right? Because I couldn't just hang out as much, you know, with friends at school or after school like a lot of people did, because I was training all the time. But I wouldn't trade it for the world. You know, I loved it. So yeah, it was well worth it. You know, it taught me so much because you have to train with so many different types of people. And then you go to these competitions and you make friends with people from other teams, and it's just such an enriching experience that just teaches you so much about yourself and how to work with such different people, right? You don't, because everybody's not the same, right? And you end up partnering up and training with different types of folks. And so it really teaches you great skills as far as, spatial awareness, but also how to deal with different types of people in the world.
Can you tell me a little bit more about those different types of people?
Well, you know, there are the people that are maybe a little more difficult to deal with because they're maybe, you know, they may be, they kind of look for shortcuts sometimes, or they're more confrontational. I was never a big confrontational person, which is kind of funny for me being a champion in fighting, right, and sparring. But they used to say, you know, it took me, I was always nice even as a fighter. One time I had someone I competed with tell me, you know, I have a sore rib from training. Could you not hit me there? And the whole time I didn't hit this person there. I won the fight, but hit him everywhere else. So I was that kind of a compassionate fighter, you know, but I'm the type of person that thinks, why can't we all get along? Even if we're competing, when we step in there in the arena to compete, that's fine. But the minute we step out, you know, I'm ready to go get a burger together or whatever, you know, I don't hold on to that kind of, you know, thing that we have to be enemies because we're competing in something. I don't think that's true. Yeah, so it was interesting, you know, and of course there's lots of different personalities, right? There are some people that are more shy and you know, you have to pull them out of their shell and help encourage them. And there's some people that also, you know, inflate. They think they know more than they do. And so you learn to work with all kinds of folks.
Yeah. And so what do you find yourself doing these days?
Along that road, you know, it's a great study of human behavior and also of people and gender. And I happen to be when I was born and raised, I was born actually female, and I'm a transgender guy. And so I knew at 5 years old that I was different. I had no idea how to explain it, because I grew up in the South of the United States in what we call the Bible Belt here. So there was no exposure to the LGBTQ+ community at all where I was from. I went to a Southern Baptist high school and you know, so there was very in college. So it was different. I just knew that at 5 years old, the name I was given and the expectations that came along with that and what I call the magic letter, the letter that a nurse looks at a baby in the hospital and puts on a piece of paper, you know, an F or an M, and it follows you, has a lot of implications on our lives, right? Most people don't ever really think about it, but I mean, it has implications on the opportunities we'll have or we won't, the expectations, the societal expectations, even the money we'll make in our life, you know, our safety. It has a lot of implications that most folks don't think through. And so I didn't know how to explain it, except that I started changing my name to a masculine name playing with other kids. You know, when I was little, I was born in the 60s. There wasn't the internet to find community or to find information about things if you were different. You know, there wasn't a way to find that kind of stuff out. And so it was tough. It was a struggle. You know, and even going to, you know, like I said, in the Bible Belt, in the church, I never believed the messaging that a lot of churches say that, you know, that something's wrong with you if you're different, if you're LGBTQ. I never believed that. You know, on one hand, they'd say God is love and all of this and God created everything. Well, guess what? You know, if that's true, then, you know, there's a whole lot of people out there that are different. So God must have created us too, you know. And it's okay. So I'm glad that my mind never took that, because a lot of people, you know, walk away with a lot of heavy baggage from that messaging and thinking there's something wrong with them. But I never felt that way. And I never felt that if God was all love, that he would be, you know, that they would be against any type of us. You know, they would love us. They created all of us to be. We have a lot of similarities, but we all have our uniqueness, you know, and that's part of the beauty of it. So I just embraced that, never bought the negative part of their messaging.
When I'm sitting here listening to you describe why you gave yourself a masculine name, it almost sounds like you're talking about ability or possibility. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me, or explain to me, for someone who hasn't had that much experience, why you think you didn't decide to become a feminist?
Oh, I am a feminist. I totally am. I teach a class on how to be a masculine feminist. I actually, my wife and I co-teach this class on how to be a masculine feminist. Yeah, I think you can be a feminist and be masculine for sure. And that's one of the things I teach in positive masculinity, is that if you are secure in who you are, you have no problem lifting others up, right? Because you don't take others as a threat if you're secure in who you are.
So that wasn't enough. There was still more in terms of your identity.
Yeah, it wasn't enough. I mean, I just felt, of course, back in the days when I was being raised, you know, the gender roles were very defined in the South at the time. And so it was, you know, if I would have been raised somewhere else where there was more flexibility in that. It might have been different, but but it was very defined. You know, like my grandmother, you know, kept trying to. My mom had me at 16, so my grandparents helped raise me. So my grandmother kept trying to put me in all the little frilly dresses, right? And that just wasn't me, right? That wasn't me. And, you know, I was my papa, my grandfather's little buddy. I mean, he taught me how to drive a tractor, how to do all the work the land, how to fish, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so we hung out and did that kind of stuff, which was very masculine. And then, of course, I found the martial arts, which also helped me be able to express a lot of qualities that many people consider masculine, right? Like physical prowess, you know, that kind of stuff. Assertiveness. Yeah. So that gave me the outlet, you know. And one of the things, if you're born biological female, is when you're young, if you're, you know, more masculine, they just say you're a tomboy and they think you'll grow out of it. Well, not all of us grow out of it, because some of us, that's who we are. And that's just who I was, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, some people say to me, well, if the world would have accepted you for just who you are, would you have ever gone through medical transition? And I don't know how to answer that, because I don't know of a world where we can go, that there's not gender socialization, right? That teaches us this is the way you need to be a man. This is the way you need to be a woman, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I hope for that world so that kids can just be whoever they are. You know, I have 6 nieces and I have 2 granddaughters, and I hope they get to grow up in that world, but we're not there yet.
No. So do you feel now, is it obvious to you that you're received differently?
Oh, yeah. I experienced sexism in such an interesting way, because as a top female athlete, because I didn't go through medical transition till I retired from competition, because they would have not allowed me to compete at the time at all. And I knew that was a rare opportunity that I had worked very hard for, and I was going to ride that ride as long as I could. So when I retired from competition at 39, that's when I began my gender transition journey shortly after that. As a top female athlete, I experienced a great deal of sexism. You know, the world of sports especially is really, it's a very male dominated world. And then martial arts is also a very male dominated world, very old school, traditional. And so I broke a lot of glass ceilings. And one of the hardest things for me when I was going to go start my transition was I felt like I would let a lot of women down that were athletes, because I had worked hard for, you know, rights for women athletes, for female athletes, because we never got the same training facilities, the same anything, right? It was always second class type things is what the women's team would get. And so I worked hard for, you know, trying to get that situation to be better than it was for female athletes. But yeah, it, you know, so that was a hard part for me to consider. I didn't want people to feel let down, because I had broken a lot of glass ceilings. I had won a lot of awards and ranks that were really difficult for people born female in that male dominated world. But I also experienced referees trying to give me like gross things, like older male referees trying to give me their room key to do me favors at competitions. And I mean, young girl athletes put up with it. It's just a really toxic world. You know, it's hard. It's really hard. And women still put up with this kind of stuff all over. So, you know, I talk about that and I try to raise awareness around that. And the fact that I think one of the best ways to combat that is for good men, good masculine people, to speak to other men and tell them that's not okay. You know, those kinds of sexist comments and innuendos and jokes, it's just not healthy and not okay. So I try to make a difference in that way. But I've also experienced sexism on this side in a very different way than you would expect. And you know, it's interesting that things that nobody warned you about, like you know, like I've spent my life teaching self-defense all over the world to empower mainly women and children, right, to be able to take care of themselves. And the first time I walk down the street in the evening looking like this and a woman crosses the street because she doesn't know who I am and doesn't know if she's safe, wow, that really hit me like a ton of bricks, you know, that I could now be considered a threat. Of course, she didn't know my story, right? I don't blame the woman that crossed the street because I understand why she did it, right? But it's still really hard. It was a hard thing for me to take. And the other thing is I've always loved and taught children, right? And so now I used to be able to goof off and play with a baby in the stroller or in the grocery cart in front of me in the grocery store line. And now if I'm by myself, you know, you get these looks from the mom or the aunt or the grandma, whoever's with the child, like, are you some creepy old guy, right? I have to be very careful how I approach that. Now, if my wife is with me or a friend that's female, then it's taken very differently, right? It's okay. But there's things like that, that good men, the good-hearted men in the world pay the price for the ones that do the awful things. Yeah.
So do you feel that your personality has been impacted?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think in my opinion, I've become far more compassionate. And I'm much more aware and, you know, cognizant of people's reactions. You know, like one of the things that I talk to cis men about, and for those maybe listening that don't know what cis means, it means it's a biological term in biology. It means matching. So it means the body you were born with matches who you feel you are on the inside. And the word trans in biology means opposites. So that's where those root words come from to help people understand. But I talk to cis men about if you're walking down the street and you see a woman like clutch your purse and walk faster, it's because she's uncomfortable and doesn't know if she's safe. So back off and give her space. You know, I'm trying to get them just to be more aware, right? Because most cis men are not even aware of this because they've never lived this experience. They don't understand it, right? They don't think about the threat of rape, right? They don't think about the threat of generally, you know, of sexual assault and that kind of thing. So it's not on their radar as much.
And when you were talking about gender socialization, I think generally men are taught that they're entitled to take up more space than a woman, and that they haven't been taught to tend to other people's needs.
Right. That's a great way to say it. They're taught that they're allowed to take what they want, right? That the world's basically all about them. You know, and so, but if you break it down, I found men pretty receptive to the message when you break it down to them, you know, because most of them have women in their life that they love, whether it's their mother, their sister, they have daughters or granddaughters or, you know, whatever, right? They have women that they love. And I think when you break it down to that, I found most men to be really receptive. Of course, there are a few people that will never be open to this message, right? They're the hardcore, you know, it's all about, especially the white man, you know, in charge of everything, right? And, you know, but there's a whole lot of guys in the middle, and there's a whole lot of guys, you know, that are more tender as well, that are open to learning. One of the reasons my wife and I started teaching this class on how to be a masculine feminist is because we have heard from men that a lot of men want to better support the women in their life, but they're afraid to make a mistake and don't know how. And so we kind of lay out a roadmap for them of how to be a good ally and support women. You know, so they're not fumbling around trying to figure it out on their own, right? Because they're so afraid in this world of, you know, kind of calling people out right now to make a mistake.
Yeah. Let's talk about opening the door for a woman. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts, you know, I was raised, like I said, in the South, where those kind of manners were. I was taught that from the time I was very young, right? Yeah, to always open the door. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. You know, like get up and give your seat if you're younger for someone older or for a mom with children or whatever, right? That was drilled into me. So now I ask, because it's all about consent. You know, when I first moved to, I live in Seattle, Washington now, which is very different from where I grew up in the East Coast South, you know. And when I first moved here, I dated a young girl who I went and opened her door, and she just gave me the what are you doing? Why are you, do you think I can't open my own door? And I was like, of course I don't. I know you can open your own door, right? I was just like, wow, okay. So, you know, but we had a really good conversation about it. And so to me, everything is about consent. And that's part of the things that I help teach men, because we weren't having this conversation when I was growing up, and probably not when early when you were growing up either, right? This consent conversation has really just been in the last few years. And so consent isn't just about sex. It's about everything, right? It's about, you know, it's about opening the door. It's about asking to take someone's picture or if you can sit next to them or whatever, right? So that's a learn. It's something that people have to learn and relearn, unlearn the old ways and then replace it with the healthier things.
And what it means to be non-binary and how we should support someone in that situation. What would you like to say about that?
Well, I think people have to understand, first of all, that binary systems are kind of meant to divide us. One of the interesting things about binary systems is you have to have one to define the other. So when you ask somebody, define masculinity to me, most people will say, well, it's the opposite of the other, of femininity, right? It's the opposite. If you just take the rich and the poor, you wouldn't even know you have the rich, you know, if you didn't have the opposite, right? So they need each other to define one another. But it puts us on these opposite sides of the room, right? And it's kind of polarizing. And there's just a whole lot in the middle, right? There's not one way to be feminine, not one way to be masculine. There's many different ways to express all of this. You know, you look at The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, the famous actor, you know, and superhero guy. Well, he's very different than like Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, or Bill Gates, right? It's a very different form of masculinity, right? You know, and it's the same thing. You could look at feminine, you know, there's very different forms of femininity as well. So there's not just one way. And I think that's the thing we have to realize is it's not like it was in the past where we just thought there's one way to be a man or one way to be a woman. And it's beautiful to let people express these different ways to just to be. It's wonderful. There's nothing wrong with it, right? And there's some people that are more gender fluid, like some days they'll feel more masculine and some days they feel more feminine. I actually think we're all kind of that way, but it's hard for people to admit that. I don't think even every woman who dresses up and puts makeup on and does her hair, she doesn't feel like doing that all the time, right? You know, and no tough guy wants to be the tough guy every moment of his life. I mean, that's just kind of impossible. So it's, yeah. So I think there's more fluidity to gender than most people will admit.
And can you talk to me about pronouns?
Yes. You know, one of the things I love to say to people, because a lot of people, especially people that I would say are over 40, they have a lot of people have a little resistance and a hard time to using they, them as a pronoun. It just kind of boggles their mind, right? It's hard to learn. But we call a guy The Rock. That actor I'm talking about, Dwayne Johnson, we call him The Rock, right? We name boats women's names. You know, if we can call a guy The Rock, we can get this pronoun thing. It's not that difficult. It's really not that difficult. And we just have to realize that these binary systems, when we go back to that, because that's what pronouns are about, right? Most languages like Spanish and English especially are very binary in language. There's not a lot of options if somebody doesn't fit into that binary, right? So that's why they, them is being used. And the binary leaves a lot of people out where they don't feel like they fit into either end of that spectrum. And so it's about just being more inclusive, about just being more open, making people feel welcome and like they belong. That's all it is.
I was eating sushi the other day, and there was someone, it was a sushi train set up, and they actually had a they, them badge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting because on the one hand, I think most of us make assumptions. Mm-hmm. About how we might interact with someone. So on the one hand, I thought it was great. And on the other hand, I thought, oh, that's the fact that they are wearing that was interesting also. What do you think about that situation?
Well, you know, I talk to people all the time about starting to incorporate your pronouns into when you introduce yourself. Mm-hmm. And the reason I tell people to do that is, it's just like I talked about a minute ago. If I say to you, hi, Stacy, my name is Mac. My pronouns are he, him. I just do that in my introduction. Then what happens is if anybody is gender diverse within the room that we're in, within the area we're in talking, they're going to hear that and they're going to feel more comfortable and safer right away with me. So even though my pronouns are he, him, they're going to recognize that I understand there are options there. Right?
Yeah.
Right?
I have heard of people, especially when they're emailing and they're in group chats and things like that, who are now deciding just to use people's names.
Yes.
That's another way to handle it. As opposed to talking about somebody in the third person.
Right.
Yep.
And there's also a lot of gender neutral language. You know, I speak to audiences all the time. Sometimes I speak to, you know, like if I speak to a group of young people, I'll say young scholars or friends, hello friends, instead of ladies and gentlemen, right? You know, there's a lot of different ways you can incorporate gender neutral language. It just takes a little practice, you know, and you have to think through it because it takes a little getting used to.
So, given that, and the fact that you talk about masculinity,
yes,
why are you not taking an all-inclusive approach?
Well, I actually do. My book is Positive Masculinity Now, but I'm in the process of writing two other books right now. One, my wife and I are writing about how to be a masculine feminist, and another that a close friend who is a trans woman. She's like, I call her my sister from another mister. And we're writing together about our gender journeys and how, what we've experienced on all the different sides of this, you know, but I tackled masculinity because I think the masculine needs the most help. I'll be honest. You know, there's a whole lot of things that masculine people can learn from women. I don't know if you know that the highest suicide rate is among middle-aged men. And I mean like 3 to 1 or 4 to 1 in some areas. And I think part of the reason is that masculine socialization that, number one, you always have to be self-sufficient. You always have to be strong. You have to have all the answers. And, you know, it's just impossible. It's absolutely impossible to keep that up all the time, right? And it also limits our lives and I think creates a very lonely existence. Women are much better at sharing what's really going on with them with their friends than men are. Men have these very surface friendships or colleagues, you know, that they only talk about sports and work or something like that, right? They don't really say what's going on inside very often, not many men. And I think that's part of the problem there, right? Women are much better at sharing that emotional load with their friends, with different people, not just their intimate partner. And they get more support because of that. And men are afraid other men are going to think they're weak if they share, like, I'm struggling with something, right? Or I'm feeling depressed. Or the messaging that men get is that that's a weakness. And so it keeps men from asking for help, you know, or being real with their friends. And then you end up with these shallow friendships. And, you know, you end up, there's a lot of loneliness with that, you know. And I just think that spirals into, and of course, you know, men from the time they're little are told to shut their emotions down, right? Because it's not okay to show emotion except for high-fiving when you win the game, or, you know, celebrating when something like that, or anger and prowessness, you know. So you're not allowed to show any other emotion. And so, I mean, I've seen this from coaching children in the martial arts. I've had brothers and sisters from the same household take class, and when each of them takes a, you know, a bad hit or falls wrong or whatever, you know, if a little girl cries, she's her family will coddle her really right away. If a little boy does, even 5 years old, 6 years old, he's told to suck it up right away. It's a very different existence, right? And so they're told to shut that down. And then they get older and get into a relationship. And what do most women say to them? Well, you're not emotionally available to me. Well, the world's been telling you to shut that down forever, right? So they don't even know how to access it. So I just found that men needed this work. And in my book, and in the workshops I do, but in my book, I have worksheets behind each chapter where you can actually go through the way you were socialized. It'll help anybody. But I specifically talk to the masculine about who were your role models and what did you learn from them, and what parts of that is still serving you well in your life, and what's not, that you can, as a conscious adult now, make better choices, right? And so I'm really trying to get them to do that inner work, which is not easy. A lot of men end up in my workshops or in my discussion group every month because the women in their life send them, to be honest, you know. Or to they get to the point where they've gone through a divorce or had a rough something happen in their life. They've had a loss, and they're trying to figure it out, you know. So, yeah, it takes a lot for them to get there, generally.
What advice would you give to a parent of young boys or girls, or someone who may or transition or maybe non-binary?
Yeah. Well, first of all, that I think we can change. Part of my messaging is we can change a lot of this in the way we raise the kids in our lives, and the way we coach them if you're a coach, the way we teach them if you're a teacher, if you're an aunt, an uncle, whatever. The influence we have on young people is to not give boys that message to shut down emotionally. You know, to teach them that they're feeling, we're emotional beings that have the ability to think. That's what Brené Brown says, who's the expert on vulnerability. We're not thinking beings that have some emotions. We're emotional beings first. And so I think that's part of the messaging is supporting boys in their emotional intelligence and understanding healthy ways to actually deal with their emotions other than anger and violence, right? And also, I think it's important that the girls hear this message, and because some women, because they were socialized with the same messaging, they support this. There's a story that I tell in my book, and I've told many times that my youngest stepson, he was 13 and he was getting prepped to get braces, and his mom was at work. So I took him to the appointment, and he was going to have to get a tooth pulled. And it was his first time getting a tooth pulled, right? And he's this tall kid. He was very tall for his age. And we're at the pediatric dentist, you know, but he's kind of dangling over the chair because he's this long kid. And he's given the dentist chair the death grip, right? Because he's nervous. And there was a woman who was the dental assistant, and she was an older woman, So I knew she was socialized in that older traditional way. And she said to him, "You're a big boy. You should toughen up." Well, she didn't know that his stepdad is the gender sensei. So I stood up and politely said, excuse me, but, you know, my wife and I raise him to where he's allowed to express his fears and his feelings. And she was like, oh, well, I'm sorry, you know, but I know that she probably went home really thinking through that, right? But so women support this narrative too. A lot of them do, because that's how they heard all this growing up as well, right? And if they haven't gone back and thought through it, you know, then they're just passing it on, right? So, yeah.
And I think the other thing too is for women, they're told boys will just be boys.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's not an excuse. That's not an excuse. That's ridiculous. And that supports the mentality that boys can just take whatever they want, you know, like without any consent. And it supports rape culture. It's really a toxic message. And so, you know, that's the other thing. I mean, I'm glad we're having this consent conversation. We need to have it with all kids, and we need to make sure boys understand that each individual person has bodily autonomy and that should be respected. You know, and that no other person is there for your taking. That is not okay. It's not healthy. And I think that message needs to be driven home. Yeah.
I think we've covered some pretty important topics, but is there anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to cover?
Well, yeah, the one thing that I think I drive home to guys is my goal is that I want everybody to flourish in life, right? Because, you know, we get this one life that we know of, and I also think that when people flourish, our entire communities are more healthy, right? You know, I think one of the things that men are really missing out on is I touched on it earlier, is those friendships that have more depth. And I think that's something that, you know, your life doesn't feel full if you don't have those kinds of friendships in them, you know, that have depth. And so I think that's one of the things that I really work with men on is trying to really develop their friendships where they can have real conversations with their friends and really check in on each other, because, you know, one of the things we learned through the pandemic, right, is our mental health is important. It's something to pay attention to. And unfortunately, you know, most men aren't taught to check in on that either, but definitely not taught to check in on each other. And so I think that's something that is so important to our well-being. And it'll make our whole community healthier. And the other message that I really stress is that the competitive message men are taught from a time where they're little, that everything's got to be, you know, a competition, right? And then you're playing this king of the hill game your whole life, you know, and you have to, which keeps us from collaborating more. Because if you're always in competition, you don't want to let anybody else in. To get, you know, so it keeps us from collaborating.
Yeah.
Which is, it's win or lose. Detrimental. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's just not healthy. You know, how much more can we all accomplish if we learn to open up and collaborate and put our heads together for things? We were created as pack animals, which means when we think about that, I know a lot of people don't like to admit we're animals, but we are, right? We're just animals that can think a little more. Think more deeply, which means we're meant to share resources. We're meant to problem solve together. We're meant to care for one another, look out for each other, right? And so that's what's going to make us feel more fulfilled in life, is when we get to that place where we're actually doing that.
Most of us struggle with identity at some point in life, and most of us won't go through the transformation Matt has. But maybe gender doesn't matter. Perhaps what matters more is consent. Life gets tricky when we make assumptions, so don't. Maybe, and respectfully, ask a question or two.
Now, dear listener, it's your turn.
Have you got something to add to the conversation? Then get in touch via the links in the show notes. Whether you have questions, a message of support, or resources that you think might help, we'd love to hear from you. And if by chance you know someone with a story that will inspire others, be sure to let us know. Your contributions help turn inspiration into action, drive positive change, and make life just that little bit better. And if this conversation inspired you to expand your worldview, head to hellohuman.global to join the conversation.